Welcome back, Seahawks fans, to the newest episode of the Seahawks Nest podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Santo, joined, as always, by the Queen Bee, to my worker bee. It's Kevin Garber. Kevin, how you doing?
I am feeling as though I will find some place to stash myself away for the winter in order to be sure that the hive succeeds.
And our very own Drone Bee. That's right. He's joining us today for our very special draft preview episode. I almost said Eric. Brett. Brett. How you doing, buddy?
I'm used to it. I'm good. Fresh off of my flag football coaching debut. No longer sequestered away from society at large.
Coach Hancock, did you do Spider 2Y Banana?
No, but funny story. When I was going through the plays that I wanted, because we only get to practice once a week, some kid goes, "So like in Madden?" And I was like, "Yes, I did actually steal this play from Madden. Thank you." So that was kind of awesome. I did not feel like an old man. I was like, all right.
Brett, one step ahead of Matt Patricia.
I still got it. Hey, you know what? That play worked too. So yeah, definitely one step ahead of that.
That was your best play. Was that your play that scored the touchdown?
No, I don't even remember how he scored.
Hey, does your quarterback know what a hard count is?
No, not yet.
You got to get him on that.
Also, every head coach is right. That clock management stuff, that is a blow up. It was like every time I was like, how much time we got left? How many timeouts we got? And yeah, like people are like saying shit and from the stands and you can hear them. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. Yeah. So yeah,
you need a guy like that just stands there. A guy who plays a lot of Madden that can just like kind of tell you what to do. Okay. One story before we get to our main topic here. John Ryan re-signed with the Seahawks to retire as a Seahawk. And I think my favorite part about this was Julian Love came in with a box of cigars for him, which is funny because, you know, John Ryan last year was dragging the team a little bit for smoking cigars after missing the playoffs. So all in good fun. All across
Nathan,
the board.
Are you putting a moratorium on your usual hatred of one-day contracts, or did you also hate this one in spirit?
It sucks, but at least we know who's raising the 12th man flag in week one. Like, is it deadlocked to be our home opener? Do we have a home game week one, Brett? You're the season ticket holder.
They announced that in a couple weeks, but okay. I'm definitely excited for it to be Richard Sherman raising the flag, so can't wait.
It will not be Richard Sherman. They're erasing him. They're erasing him from franchise history, I've heard. Kevin, do you have a favorite John Ryan memory, though?
I mean, other than the face?
Yeah, the face is the one, yes.
The face he made. Like the one everyone has.
It's great.
Being 2009 season team MVP, the Mora season, he was such a lone bright spot in such a dark time. Yeah. I would say Brett and I's co-mingled Seahawk fandom was extremely tied to John Ryan's season in 2009.
You had to really be a fan. Like, there was nothing enjoyable besides co-mingling.
There's a reason they turned over like 90% of the roster and he was one of the survivors. Because he was actually like pretty good at football. He's a really good punter. Like,
and a good vibes dude.
Seahawks have been lucky that, you know, through the years we have not had like a downtime for specialists, really. Like, you know, we've had like the Blair Walsh year was probably like the lone dark spot.
Never forget he won us a playoff game.
Yeah, but not while he played for us. all right. So here's the deal. We're gonna go to our main topic here. It's our big final draft preview. We're gonna play a game. I'm gonna ask you the question, Brett. What's the most you've ever lost on a coin flip?
Do you consider betting on the home run derby a coin flip?
I don't know. I'm just saying, for the sake of this segment, I'm playing the part of Anton Chigurh. I've got my cattle boar here.
At the end of this, you're gonna kill one of us.
You guys have 9 lives. You have to bet your life on each of these questions. If you get all 9 questions wrong, you might wake up with me outside your house with a giant can of pressurized air. Okay, so you got 9 lives, 9 questions. Here we go. We're gonna start with question number 1. We'll go Brett, Kevin every time. Okay.
Yep.
So here we go. Do the Seahawks trade down in the first round?
No.
Okay. And then why do you think that?
I think somebody in their top 10 falls.
Okay, I think that's a good assumption. What about you, Kevin? Do you agree? Is it no or?
Okay, so the Seahawks have had a first round pick in 12 of John Schneider's 14 drafts. They have traded back in six of them. Seven total times they've traded back their top pick.
Yeah, but, it was 50-50. I tried to make all these questions.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is a good one. I'm just adding context to your question. I'm giving you credit here. But that being said, like, okay, so Spoon, JSN, Cross, Brooks, Carpenter, Okung, and Earl Thomas were all selected without trading back. And I think it says something about, like, when the guy they want is there, they are not going to trade back. They're just going to take him. But if they don't if they're not in love with what's there, like the year we drafted Collier, we traded back in the first round pretty far and just pick up 2 fourth round picks, which is like nothing.
Was that the Derwin James year?
No. Okay. That was the, not the J.R. Alexander year either. Off the top of my head, I don't have it.
Yeah.
Regardless. I think that there's enough high end talent. There's going to be a guy that they just want and they're going to take him.
Okay. I think they have desire to trade down. They know that they probably need to pick up a little extra pick here or there. But like you both said, there's a good shot that someone we really want, especially like offensive tackle, is available at this pick. Any of the top guys.
The flip side of that, though, is Latham, if there's like Latham, five guys they want, we could trade back like a few spots with like the Bengals or like you know, we like the class if we trade back to like pick 21 or lower. But you know, we don't care for what's left. We trade back for anything past like pick 22.
I if you just list them off, Latham, Fautanu, Tofonga. Yeah. Those four guys, like tackles, there's a good chance one of them is available when we pick. And I just have a hard time seeing us passing up that kind of opportunity to get a, you know, field tilting tackle, in the first round, but we'll see what happens. Next question. You guys ready? I'm going to read the name of all the players that we give a top 30 visit to, and you're going to pick one that you think we'll draft. Okay? So these are all the Seahawks top 30 visits. You pick one that you believe we will draft. Here we go. Christian Boyd, T'Vondre Sweat, Grayson Murphy, Chop Robinson, Jared Verse, Nathaniel Watson, Tyrese Knight, Travis Glover, John Reese Plumlee, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, Theo Johnson, Malachi Corley, Cam Kitchens, Matt Gone Cavs. He's got small calves. Michael Dowd, Jawan Briggs, Quantez Stiggers, Mike Jarrell, Cooper DeJean, George Holani, Carlton Johnson.
So I actually got pronunciation on it. It's Gonsalves.
Sure. I'm sure I could have looked it up too, because there's pronunciation guides in the media set. I just like was like, you know, I'm never looking this up. It's now a part of my life. Okay.
Yeah, I gave it to you. Now you have it.
Yeah. And I'm trying to forget it though. I'm going to take a drink of this whiskey right here and just try to forget. Okay. Brett, you're up first.
Spencer Rattler. I'm putting it in the universe.
Spencer Rattler. All right. What you just think he falls into the third round and they just like they're ready to snap him up kind of deal?
Yeah.
All right, sounds good to me.
Really likes Drew Lock, and he wants him again.
Kevin, what about you? Do you who's your guy you're picking?
Okay, so I pulled out guys that I'm interested in, and I put them in three camps. So one camp has Cooper DeJean, Jared Verse, and Byron Murphy, but we only have one opportunity to pick them, and if I say one of those guys, they might not even be there when we pick at 16. So that seems like a poor choice on my part. So you're gonna kill me if I get this wrong.
I also no, you got 9 lives though. So you just lose one of your lives. It's not that big a deal. You'd have 8 more. Also,
that's the person not losing a life.
I do think that taking one of those is a nice hedge because, you know, those guys, especially like Chop Robinson and Cooper DeJean, seem like guys that we would target if we traded down about 5 or 10 picks. So to me, it's like, oh, he's hedging. Now he's going to keep one life and lose one life here. That's why pick one of those guys. So,
the other guy I won't pick is T'Vondre Sweat because we really brought him in to see if he's a chucklehead, and he seems like a chucklehead, but we have no idea. So since I'm not in the interview room, I can't really say it. So that leaves me with an interesting list to me with Theo Johnson, Nathaniel Watson, Cameron Kitchens, Mac Gonsalves, and Quintez Stiggers, who I think all make sense, and we'd have a couple of cracks at. So I'm gonna go with Gonsalves because I think we have a few shots with him in day three, and he seems like one of those guys where his floor is like a Jamarco Jones, and we could really use that kind of swing, play everywhere guy.
I would have picked if you know forced at Cattle killer point. I would have picked Theo Johnson here. Okay, Brock Heward has compiled a list of 20 draft picks. He says feel like great fits for the Seahawks. 17 have been revealed. I want you to try to guess one of the ones that will be in the last three. So far he has done Theo Johnson, Braylon Trice, Peyton Wilson, Jackson Powers Johnson, Ben Sinnott, Sione Vaki, Cooper Beebe, Taj Washington, Latu, Chris Jenkins, Zach Zinter, Cooper DeJean. He actually mislabeled this video. It's okay. Yeah. Cooper DeJean, Cole Bishop, Mike Sanderstil, Tavondre Sweat, Michael Penix, and Byron Murphy. All right, Brett, what's a player you think that's a great Seahawks fit that Brock's going to identify in his final three videos here? Heading into the draft on Thursday. He timed it perfectly. Let's be honest.
How big of a homer is Brock Heward these days? Will he put an Oregon player on his list?
He already did.
He already put one.
Okay. I missed that. Oh man, this one's tough. I should have done a little bit of research. Kevin, go for it.
I gave you the questions before we started. No, I'm just
R.I.B.
All right.
Wait. Oh. Did you say Byron Murphy?
He already did. Yes. Byron Murphy. Yeah.
That was the most recent one.
That was the last one. That was the last one he did.
Well, there you go. That would have been all right. Kevin, go ahead. I'm gonna do this whole.
All right. So far, there's 9 trench players, but only 3 of them are offensive linemen. Yeah. So.
I think you're going with the one I would go with. I think we're on the same wavelength there.
All right. So I misread the question and I tried to guess all three.
Oh, okay. I want you to pick the one you think is the most likely and then you can tell me the other two. How's that sound?
Troy Fatanu is the most likely.
Agreed. I think that's a deadlock. I think it's a deadlock that guy is one of the last
three. He's a great fit. We have his O-line coach and Brock's a homer.
And Brock went to UW. Yeah. I think it's like a deadlock, Fatanu. Do you want to pick someone else, Brett? Or are you also going to take Troy Fatanu? It's fine. I won't blame you. It's a great pick.
For all those reasons, for sure. I was ready to throw out Michael Penix because I know what gets already the on engagement.
There. You did a great job of picking guys.
Yeah, I know. He's already on there. Exactly.
What were your other two, Kevin?
Okay, Junior Colson.
I agree. That was my second choice. Graham Barton, I didn't have, but that is a.
The other two that I had it narrowed down to are Talise Fuanga out of Oregon State and Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. So those are my five that I think could make those three.
Yeah. So I think Fatanu is a deadlock to be on this list. Feels like a very Siaki prospect, which is why I wanted to do this question. Because I think Brock is looking at it in a really clever way, which is like these players fit what we want to do. We know Fatanu knows the offense because he's coming from the system. He's also just a great fit because the guy is a one-man running game. Like, he creates in space, just blowing people up. His movement abilities are second to none. Pulling as a left tackle and getting all the way across. Guys just don't have the ability to do that in the way he does. Very special player and someone I'd be very excited to see us draft at 16. And I would want him to play tackle. I'm just going to make that clear. I'm going to keep saying that. He should play tackle. Whoever drafts him should play him at tackle. Everyone who says he should play guard is a fool. You're a fool.
If you're playing him at left guard, it's because you think that your tackles are both really good, but you're planning on slipping him to tackle like when one of your other guys is like ages out or something.
All right. We know that speaking of homers and local legends, local legend Michael Penix Jr., someone the Seahawks are obviously familiar with and looking at. I have a question for you guys, though, just about Penix. I doubt that he ends up being available. The current odds for him to be drafted in the first round are -125 yes, -105 no. It's basically nearly even money on both sides of this. Do you guys think a team picks Penix in the first round? And if you want, you can say which team. I will not count it against you if you're wrong, though.
I will start again now that we're back on track. Yes. And I'm going to say the
Raiders. I started doing it before you said that, but there is a lot of smoke to the Raiders really want Penix. The question is, do they because they're probably not taking him with their first pick. That'd be really high. So do they trade back into the first to make sure they get him? It's a serious question. Kevin, what do you think? Do you think that there is first round for Penix?
Okay, so somebody made a comp for him that landed way too solid and I can't get it out of my head. And tell me what you think of this comparison. I think it was Nate Tice said that Michael Penix is Byron Leftwich.
First of all, Nate Tice, great scout and football guy. Like, if you're not following him, he's he knows what he's talking about. Mike Tice's son played college football. Really good, really good analyst. That is a good comparison. And I honestly, if you could draft Byron Leftwich, that's pretty solid.
He has a lot of the same flaws with kind of like his processing and stuff like that. And also like a lot of questions about how he plays under pressure from the offensive line.
The thing about Byron Leftwich wasn't that he processed slow, is that he had like a windup. Like Byron Leftwich was weird.
He had the weird hitch.
He wound up to throw and it made it take way too long. Where, I mean, Penix, if you're just looking at like the throws, if you just look at the throws from the quarterbacks in this draft, his are the best, right? His throws look the best. Now the problem is, you know, the processing's a little slow. He played with literally like three borderline first round or first round NFL wide receivers. His offensive line is going to have a first rounder and then multiple other players that get drafted. It's a tough eval in a vacuum like that, which would be like, oh yeah, he did it all himself. And like I said, like sometimes I'm like, why aren't you throwing to that open guy right there? Just there's a guy right there. Or why aren't you throwing that guy open? He's going to be open in a second in this soft zone. So
I think with medicals and other concerns, I don't think he's a first round pick.
Okay.
And if somebody does pick him in the first round, then that's good for us because that's value getting kickback.
Will Levis situation where he's either going to go right at the top of the second round, like someone on day two is going to be calling people all night to make sure they get him at the top of round two, or he's going to go right at towards the end of round one with a trade up. And
Where Julian Love went and where Will Levis went, I think that's pretty accurate.
It's probably the Raiders. If the Vikings don't go up and get JJ, maybe it's the Vikings.
Vikings, Raiders, Saints, I think are the three that you're looking at.
Or Vikings, you know, at the end of round one, they could go Byron Murphy with their first pick, and then they could, or they could go offensive lineman.
Yeah.
They could go, you know, who's another edge? They could go Jared Verse at 11, and then they go 23, Michael Penix. That's very possible as well. Okay. Speaking of quarterbacks, though, the Seahawks interviewed a couple of them. Reese Plumlee, Spencer Rattler, Bo Nix. Bo Nix is the only player who met with all 32 teams, by the way. So apparently everyone has him somewhere on their board.
Nobody can figure him out, basically.
He's on the board somewhere. I think it's because they know Bo Nix is a future clipboard holder. That's his lot. He's drawn. But do the Seahawks draft a quarterback in this draft? What do you think, Brett?
Yes.
All right, you said they were going to pick Rattler, so you're already on that. Kevin,
yeah, but I mean, it could be somebody else.
Kevin, what do you think they draft a quarterback in this draft?
I think they traded for Howell because they didn't think they were going to draft a quarterback in this draft. So not counting like I think unless a quarterback falls into their lap where it's just like too much value to ignore, I don't see it. They'll probably get a guy like UDFA, or I guess maybe they spend their seventh rounder, which is functionally UDFAing.
Yeah, so my thing is like, yeah, if Jordan Travis just keeps falling and he's there in round six or something, or you know,
yeah, Michael Pratt is sitting there on day four or day three.
Yeah, Rattler's available in round four or something like weird like that, then yeah, maybe they do take a quarterback. Other than that, you're right. Sam Howell was a huge draft hedge and they basically spent the pick already. Okay, we have seven picks total. Over under 3.5 in the trenches. That's offensive lineman or defensive lineman. And I'll even give you like a Latu as a trenches guy, even though he might be standing up a lot if he ends up with us. So what do you think, Brett? Over or under 3.5 in the trenches?
I'm gonna say over because all of their hedges were elsewhere. Safety, linebacker. I guess we did have a couple of offensive line hedges, but
yeah, we brought back George Fant. We signed a left guard finally.
Yeah, we got like a Tomlinson.
I mean, Fant might play tight end. We don't know, but I'm just gonna say over.
He's definitely playing tight end. That goes without question.
I feel it in my bones. It's gonna be over. Although 3.5 is aggressive.
3.5 is aggressive, but it is like the area of biggest need. It also is a lot of positions that I'm giving you to count towards.
True.
Kevin, what do you think?
Okay, so the Seahawks have a propensity to try and address a position with more than one player, which plays into this, right? But so 2023, 4 out of 10 picks were trenches. 2022, 4 out of 9. 1 out of 3 in 2021. 3 out of 8 in 2020. 3 out of 11 in 2019. You picked a good line there with 3.5 because it probably is either 3 or 4. I'm going to take the under.
Yeah, three seems like the most likely number to me, but I know if I pick 2.5, you guys would both just slam over.
They would have been a win.
So I had to go up.
And if you'd have picked three, then you're saying two or four, so we're probably just going over anyway.
Yeah, you guys probably just pick over and hedge another way. So, yeah, I think that, like Brett said, we left the biggest holes here, so I do think it's the most likely position if we do spend multiple picks to just kind of hammer. But you never know. You never know with John Schneider what he's going to do. It could be anything. All right. The Seahawks have traded up in the draft quite a few times, especially in the middle rounds. At any point in this week's draft, will the Seahawks trade up to get a player? What do you think, Brett?
Yes.
All right. When do you see it? Like, is it like a day? Is it like a day three or is it a day two?
No, they're gonna improve their – where are we at, 82?
Okay.
They're going to improve – yeah, they're going to improve that to get a Tyler Lockett or however many, you know, umpteen times that we've done that, because, you know, they obviously like the guys that they signed in free agency enough to say, hey, they can play next year. I mean, if you assume that they all play reasonably well, the roster is kind of stacked, so they can target a guy specifically instead of just going for cheap depth down the line. So yeah. Yes, that's my answer.
All right. What do you think, Kevin?
Okay. So in half of all John Schneider's drafts, he both trades back and trades up. Mm-hmm. And usually if he's trading back, he's going to trade up. Additionally, and this is one, if you don't mind a slight tangent, there's one year where he traded up without trading back. And I was like, oh, I remember him doing, oh, it was, we traded up to be able to get Tyler Lockett. It was like, oh man, great trade up. A+ trade up.
Yeah, we gave up quite a bit for Lockett, didn't we? Like we, at the time, traded, it was kind of like, traded, wow, okay.
A fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. To move up from like the very end of the third round, like I think it was like pick 95 to like the very beginning of the third round to get Lockett, and not a single regret.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it worked. So do it again.
It was one of those things. Like we gave up a bit to trade up to get DK2 because you could tell it was one of those like that pick's there. Why is that pick? Anyway, we're just picking that guy. I guess that's happening. So that's fine. Yeah. So with the number of quality players in the top 75 in this draft, I could easily see a situation where maybe we do slide back a little bit from 16 and then we use some of that value to move up from 81, like Brett was saying, or maybe up from 102 to or is it 102 we have? Yeah.
Yeah.
Up from 102 because there's just a guy where they're going like they're having their conversation. They're like, that guy shouldn't be there. That guy's way higher on our board. You know, he fits this need. So, you know, we'll package up like 192 and 102 to move up. Or maybe we pick up a pick in like late round five, early round six, package that with one of those thirds to move up, or package that with 118 to move up. And kind of like what happened with Bradford, where we picked right at the beginning of the fourth round. So we had all that prep time on Friday night into Saturday morning to be able to kind of hone in on who we're taking there. I could see those are specifically the third round and like early day four are where I see move up being especially high potential.
All right. I don't know. I do see the idea though, like get another day two pick, like turn our 2/4 into another day two pick seems like definitely a possibility. All right. This one's a little off grid, a little different. Will the Seahawks get a uniform refresh before 2026? We saw the Jets get one. And the Lions get one, but I would challenge you if you looked at those to try to remember what the differences are without looking. Houston's new helmet leaked. Did you guys see Houston's new helmet?
Mm-hmm.
It is Eric texted me and he said it's his favorite CFL helmet. Here's the thing. I told him this. I said, it is not for me. It's not great. But I'd rather see someone take a big swing and do something interesting like that than do what the Jets and Lions did, which is like they're the same picture.
The Lions one is very bad. Yeah.
You know, I just really appreciate that they looked at the University of Houston's helmet and said, what if we did that?
But worse. Yeah. But worse, with the worst font.
Yeah.
I think, yes, the throwbacks were too good. Everybody loved them. They look great. They will sell, they will move. So I think yes.
You think they do something?
It won't be like the new one, but if it was, nobody would complain, but it will feature a lot of elements from the
I think the colors. I think the colors from the throwbacks. I think they didn't realize how much people resonated with the specific key colors mm-hmm. from the throwbacks, especially compared to the like the navy wolf gray. Like, I mean, we all have some nostalgia for those, but the neon green that are in the new uniforms compared to like the forest green and the blue from the throwbacks. I think they didn't realize like how much the city and the fans would resonate. And the
silver, like that Kingdome silver.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It would just resonate specifically with the color. So Kevin, do you think we get a uniform refresh?
I think we get a refresh. And I think that the consensus that we would all come to on the pod is old colors, new Seahawk logo. Cause the old Seahawk logo is definitely a derpier bird. New ones got a little mean, little fight to it. Yeah. The old one was sad and deflated like the Kingdome. New one is proud, part of our, it, you know, and just because we have a new head coach doesn't mean we have to get rid of all of our old pride.
Yes, I think that, you know, it's a good position for them to be in because I think they know what they need to do, which is just like do a modern look with the retro colors. Like that's it's a pretty easy, like, okay, this is what we need to do. We need to modernize the retro colors. And it's a good playground to be creative. I hope what they don't do is just take the uniform we have now and change the colors to the new colors, which is what has been. And that would be,
that's
correct me if I'm wrong. We were the first or second team to get the Nike refresh, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
But
Nike,
it felt fresh and exciting then.
Since Nike has helped Nike and Fanatics together, though, it has not been amazing since. Okay. Mike McDonald, he's refreshing the culture on and off the field. We've heard a lot this week. Took the basketball hoop out. He removed some pictures of Richard Sherman and the Legion of Boom and replace them with video boards that are also going to show pictures of Richard Sherman. Ron Schneider said that it's going to show pictures of like guys like Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor who's defined the history of the Seahawks. And I'm like, oh, so it's like,
and then Richard Sherman chose to take that comment as a personal affront, being directly mentioned as somebody who will be on the new video boards. I'm like, yep, that's where he's at in his media career.
He's engagement farming, bro. That's what you got to do. Anyway, the refresh is something that I think a lot of people have thought we kind of need. You know, you got to put a stamp, especially with a coach like Pete Carroll, who put his stamp on the franchise in such a huge way.
I thought
way.
Making the bonfire out of gum and sneakers was a little underhanded, but I mean, you know, you got to set your culture however you're gonna.
He told everyone bring a pair of Air Monarchs to the first meeting. And we're just putting them in a pile and burning them. But other than that, I think, yeah, pretty respectful. Anyway, this culture refresh, it's maybe a little needed. Does this lead to more wins on the football field? Last year, 9-8. Are we going to win more games than that next year? Does this culture refresh help? The schedule is definitely easier than last year, too. Yes,
I think I have been unwavering that this roster, even, you know, with the injuries, is way better than consecutive 9-win seasons. So yes, I think it does.
Kevin, what do you think?
Okay, I think the draft class is what's going to decide if this roster's improved over last year's roster. I think right now you could really say that they're very similar overall. I like some of the moves that were made. I think the schedule changes set up for a positive move there. I think a good class is what puts them over. But also that's a coward's answer, so I'm not going to just stick with that. So I would just go with a firm yes, we are beating our old record.
Okay.
Regardless of what we do with wins and losses, I just want to come out for it. I like it, you know, like new boss, you know, I think like anyone over the age of, you know, 26 is like, yeah, okay, it's fine. Right. I mean, like the players don't really seem to care, which I think is the right outlook, right? It's like, yeah, who cares, dude?
Yeah. When you have a boss who just tries to like kind of continue what was already happening there, it never really works out the way you expect it to. It kind of happened to me once, like where, and then slowly just the culture just eroded because it wasn't really their culture. You know, it was like someone else's culture that they were kind of trying to sell, but you have to sell yourself. Like you have to be like who you are and not just like,
You want to be the best you, not the dollar store Pete Carroll.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, we have time. And my backup thing here was if we had time after 9 Questions, 9 Lives, we'd do our final mock draft. So this is it. This is the War Room mock. We're going to do a 7-round mock. Every round after pick, every pick after round 5, though, is going to be a rapid fire Kevin pick. We're just going to fly through it because we have a limited amount of time. And I know we're going to spend way too much time on the first like 3 picks. So here we go. We are at 16. Okay, here we go. Players available on the board. Okay, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, Latu Latu, Johnny Newton, Byron Murphy II, Troy Fautanu, Amarius Mims. I would say no one else past that is someone. It's someone. If you said someone past that, I would be mad at you for taking him over these guys. So those guys are all really good. Four teams want to trade up with us. These are the teams. Okay, Vikings, 23, Arizona at 27, San Francisco 49ers at pick 31, and the Los Angeles Chargers at pick 37, which are all I honestly think all of those teams are very, it's very realistic that they would be interested in trading up in this particular situation. So let's count the players. Ken, let's do what we like to do, which count the players we would be fine with. So, okay, DeJean.
Yep.
Mitchell.
Yep.
Latu.
Yep.
Murphy.
Yep.
Fautanu. Mims.
Yep.
And I think Newton's in there. He's like, Newton for me, he's
for
like,
me. Graham Barton is for me too.
Okay, then Graham Barton is there as well. So it's that puts so you at
seven.
That's eight. That's eight. So it puts you so at
that's
eight.
That's 24.
So we could go
with the Vikings.
We could trade with the Vikings. We could trade with the Cardinals at 27 and take a moderate risk. They do have better capital to give us. They have 27, 35, and 66. The Vikings have 23 and 108. So
that's right.
I think we got to look at the Cardinals. I think we got to look at the Cardinals and take the risk.
I would be fine with either of the two centers at that point, but we have to get that pick in the 60s back minimum. Plus 20. Something.
I'm going to offer 27 and 35 for 16.
Hold on. Before you do that, how is there much separation between any of those seven that you listed to you guys, or are they almost all the same?
There is separation between them, but there is a tier break in this group for me. I will say this. I would have Fautanu and Murphy and Mitchell as like my top three in this, like pretty clear. But then those next four guys are the next tier and there's a tier break past them. Does that make sense?
It does.
Like, for me, it's like these guys are my favorites, but these guys are also very good and they're better than all of these guys. So yeah, like that's kind of how I would do it personally. I know Kevin probably has those guys mixed up a little bit, but probably you have a similar thing, Kevin.
I have a similar setup. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your like top three guys here?
That you Fautanu, DeJean,
mm-hmm.
and,
Murphy, Brian Murphy, Brian Murphy too.
Quinyon Mitchell.
Quinyon Mitchell. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. We're gonna offer the Arizona Cardinals 16 for 27 and 35. The PFF machine says this trade has a 22% chance of being accepted.
So I think that's about right.
All right. And they accepted the trade. So we are moving. We are moving down.
Yeah. Okay? They pay the tax for trading in the division.
All right. So 27. The player that survived from our list of players is Johnny Jerzon Newton. Now, there is a lot of smoke that this guy is falling down the boards. He did not do any physical testing. His tape is awesome, which is why I think me and Kevin like him. It's great tape, but he's small and he didn't do physical testing, which leads people to, you know, create a narrative in their head, which is that he's trying to hide something because he's not sure.
But he's coming off a foot injury, so it's like there's a reason.
Yeah.
Also,
but you understand the narrative.
Oh yeah, that's the narrative though.
Do most players give a reason when they don't test, or are they just kind of like, eh?
Usually they'll say that they're hurt or whatever.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I will say Latu went one pick in front of us, which is pretty frustrating.
It's Derwin James all over again.
By the way, the Cardinals did come up to get Byron Murphy, which I agree with. That is a very smart, shrewd of them. That is the player they should pick. But we did need the draft capital. Okay, so players that we could take other than Johnny Newton. I'm going to read the next 10 players that PFF has on here. Okay, so A.D. Mitchell, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Troy Franklin, Peyton Wilson, Tyler Newbin, Ladd McConkey, Zach Frazier, Mike Sammerstill, Bo Nix, Penix Jr., Jordan Morgan, Chop Robinson, I think is an interesting prospect of this that PFF has rated way too low. after that, I'm not interested in any of these guys. Anybody stick out to you as someone that you take over Newton, Kevin? Or
the only other person I consider here would be Frazier. I think Frazier might be there at 35.
Yeah, I'm not
heartbroken without him.
I like Peyton Wilson quite a bit. Like I said, I like Chop Robinson, but the way that this board is developing, I think we might be able to get two trenches players right here for the price of one. So here we go. We picked We picked Johnny Newton. Kool-Aid McKinstry, Chop Robinson, Ladd McConkey, Roger Rosengarten. What?
Yep.
Roger Rosengarten. Nice job, 49ers. A.D. Mitchell, Zach Frazier, Xavier Worthy. That's just not the tackle I would have taken. That's why I did that. We're back on the board. Troy Franklin, okay. Peyton Wilson, Tyler Newbin, Mike Samardzija, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., Jordan Morgan, Adisa Isaac, Brandon Fisk, Ennis Rekestra Jr., Jalen Polk, Chris Jenkins. So this, I don't usually pick in this spot. This is like, there's a lot. Adrian
Cooper. There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot here. Three teams want to trade up with us.
I'd be very interested in a trade up or a trade back.
Titans at 38 want to trade with us. I do want to say at this point though, trading up four picks seems weird to me. Like I don't, what do they know that we don't? That's what I would want to know.
they need a receiver. We don't.
At 35, I really, really, really like the idea of getting either Peyton Wilson or Tyler Newbin. I would be scared. We're only going down 38. That's only like three picks. We could, with one of those guys will be there, right, Kevin?
I'm not super concerned if they're not, because for me, Chris Jenkins is an equally valuable pick.
106? Would you do 38 and 106 for 35? They don't really have a lot. They're missing their third round pick next year. 38 and 106 for 35.
Yeah, and then maybe get like a fourth next year or a fifth next year.
Yes, you can get a fifth next. Maybe. Yeah, you can get a fourth. Yeah, we can do that. They took it on the first try. All right. We can pick Peyton Wilson or Tyler Newbin. Neither came off the board. They traded up to get Jalen Polk. Jordan Morgan and Troy Franklin came off in between.
Told you my receiver.
This is you were right on it.
Nailed it.
I would have taken. Would you take Polk or Franklin first, Kevin?
Didn't you say Adonai Mitchell was there?
No, A.D. Mitchell went 32 to the Chiefs.
If I'm them, I'm taking Franklin because they need the deep threat. Jalen Polk's a little bit overlappy with some of the other guys I have, but whatever.
Yeah. Troy Franklin's so fast. Okay. All right, Kevin. Wilson or Newbin? This is it. This is the pick.
All right.
Or do you want Michael Penix Jr.?
Linebacker or safety?
Or do you want Michael Penix Jr., boys?
What kind of linebacker?
Alpha linebacker, sideline to sideline speed, some injury concerns, a little bit of an older prospect, but really solid player, good speed and athleticism.
One of the bigger linebackers in this class, too.
It's a, no, whereas really. The safety also, is just like Steady Eddie, reminds me a lot of, honestly, a lot of Julian Love, where you could just kind of do everything, but it doesn't have like a calling card.
Yeah. I don't really want either of those players as described.
Well, we're in the second round, Brett.
This
is what the players are like now.
Give me the linebacker, because I don't want to see run defense as bad as we have
had. I mean, we could go down. You want to get Adisa Isaac? Do you want to get Michael Penix Jr.? Is there a guy who sticks out to you, Kevin?
Like I said, Jenkins is the other guy that sticks out to me. He's a difference maker, like down lineman. Adding him and Jerzon Newton is a lot of talent inflection into the front three.
Yeah, I just feel like it's kind of we already.
That's kinda a bit of a. Well, I feel like he's a very different player than Johnny Newton. He's going to play nose.
It's just a lot of investment in defense.
In interior. A situation where we don't have a lot of players.
Yeah, because we already have Leonard Williams. There. We already have
Mike Morris.
Mike Morris. We've already like kind of.
We already have up. Reed. We have three starters because we have Jones, DeMarco, Reed, yeah, and
Tremont Jones. Like we have a lot of taking.
So that's we're drafting two rotation guys in our first two picks. That's it would have been nice if one of the O-linemen would have stayed, but that didn't really happen.
Maybe we should have just stuck and picked Fauton, and we made a mistake. All right, well, I think we'll take the linebacker though, Peyton Wilson. Yep. Like Brett said, we make sure the run defense.
How the draft goes, that's gentlemen.
Position need.
All right, when we come back at 71, we have made a grave mistake, boys, because the top player on the board, according Junior to Pro Coulson. Football Focus, is Junior Coulson, who is extremely good, and honestly would be good with Peyton Wilson probably too. Like
didn't pay our linebackers enough that says that we can't do that.
It's true. None of these guys are making a ton of money. The other top guys on the board, Devontae Walker, a bunch of running backs, Johnny Wilson, Jalix Hunt, like a pretty premier athlete, Kyrie Jackson, Cooper Beebe.
Cooper Beebe is really good.
Jeremiah Trotter.
Yeah, there's a name I actually...
Cooper Beebe, the thing is that there's a shot he's available at 102 when we draft.
And I don't think he's a huge difference than Christian Mahogany, who's also kind of right in there. There's a little glut of O-linemen in the like very, very end of round three, beginning of round four that I think are similar. I'm taking Junior Colson here, and we just have our linebackers in the future.
Junior Colson is really good. The only thing is that, like, just going pick back-to-back picks on linebackers, can you imagine Seahawks Twitter?
Can that makes me want to do it more, not less.
I mean, it's already dire straits, dude. It doesn't even matter what happens.
Can you imagine, yeah, though? They would be so mad. They'd be like,
apocalyptic.
Back-to-back linebacker picks. So, why did we trade back? I'm so angry right now.
Oh, man, you're talking me into this pick.
Well, should have fired the GM. I don't know what to tell you.
Right. A little more sugar on your pizza.
I was correct, by the way. Cooper Beebe is available at 102.
I have a question, since Kevin brought up O-line and we're in that zone. So you have Oluolu and Bradford, and then you have the old, hopefully not broken dudes that we brought in for cheap. What rounds do we need to be drafting in for guys where you would be like, okay, I expect them to start over the hedge, and then the young guys are already on the roster?
This is about the latest I would feel I can expect them to push for playtime.
So yeah, here's the thing, is there is a group of players in this draft that are incredibly athletic. So I do think there's a chance that in the middle rounds here, you're going to be able to find a guard that maybe shouldn't be available because there's so many explosive athletes available in the guards. And I'm going to give you an example here because we have two of the next five picks. Okay, and these players are all available. Cooper Beebe, Braylon Trice, Cedric Van Pran, Christian Mahogany, Cam Kinchins, Hunter Nerzad. I would love to have all of those players. This is like the situation where I'm thinking about like trying to get multiple picks in these five, but this is like a great spot for us to be in. Does someone stick out to you guys?
Cooper Beebe sticks out to me just because Cooper Beebe's floor is like C+ starting guard. I mean, it's not, but it is, you know what I mean? I don't see a lot of paths to Cooper Beebe just being a complete wasted pick. He knows ball. He can play all three interior positions. His arm length is the only reason I don't think he could play right tackle. Like, he's very effective and he's quick. Like, he has a calling card in his athleticism, which is the one thing I thought he was going to kind of be lacking. Like, I feel like he just kind of slots in and he's a day one starting guard.
For me, I feel like it's incredibly weird that we can get a player of Braylon Trice's quality at 102. That seems incorrect to me. Like, it's not going to happen.
Braylon Trice's sack production is low because he's such a pocket pusher, but he gets so many pressures.
Yeah, well, he's just weird. And a lot of people think that's
kind of fake. But, like, I don't know. He was so consistent about getting tons of pressures his entire UW career that it doesn't feel like it would be fake.
He just plays like this, like, high energy, like, really wide style that I think, it makes it hard to translate. I think a lot of people are scared that he won't translate to the NFL because he has to line up so wide to be effective.
But he can especially play against the run, so it's like...
But he's 274. Like, it doesn't... I think he just needs, like, refinement. It's like a...
You like Hassan Reddick out there?
No, he's bigger than that.
He's just big. He's big. He just lines up really wide.
He's kind of like AJ Epenesa.
Like, 892 of his snaps last year... Which there's only 33 other snaps other than that came outside the tackle, which is pretty far out there. You know,
he's not, 3-4 lineman is fine if we're playing him as an edge.
Right. I just think he's a good fit for us. Like, I think
let's take him here because there's like three offensive linemen that would all make sense in the next spot.
That's what I'm thinking as well. All right. So we lost Beebe, but we kept Mahogany. Cam Kinchins, who I'm still not going to just take out of the conversation because he is a good safety. Cedric Van Pran, Hunter Nerzad. I think for me it's a pretty easy Mahogany, but I haven't scouted Van Pran that much, Kevin. I know he's like a really smart, like high IQ center prospect. I feel like that's what we already have.
I feel like the difference between him and Olu is that Olu wasn't as much of a finisher. Olu patty caked a little bit more, whereas Van Pran wants to put you on your backside. But I feel like Mahogany, first of all, I think Mahogany has left guard, right guard flexibility. He just wasn't asked to do that. Second of all, people mover.
Yeah. Strong. He's a strong man. Okay. We're back on the board at 118. We got Hunter Nerzad, Tavondre Sweat, Sione Vaki, Trevor Keegan, Taylor Bortolini, Cole Bishop, Theo Johnson. I'm going to stop saying names now. I feel like I'm going too far down.
I know you love Hunter Nerzad, and I wouldn't veto it. My problem with Hunter Nerzad is I have never seen someone that misses stunts and blitzes as much as he does for a guy that like started for 3 years. It worries me to my core. But all of his athleticism and everything is ideal.
The athleticism is nuts. I don't know. I think this is like, for me, like this is, if this was actually really what was happening, I think if the Seahawks had a good interview with him, they'd probably take Tavondre Sweat.
You're right.
You can't teach 370 pounds moving like that. You can't teach it. He's one of one. If that interview was not totally terrible, I think this is like their Frank Clark moment right here. Round 4, pick 18. They're like, yeah, this is it. We take the guy that we think is the best, and that is Tavondre Sweat. So there you go. He's in our draft here. We have a long way to go before the next pick. So Kevin, we're gonna speed run it. Jordan Travis is the top guy on the board. You good with that? At 179. Yeah, that is 179? Like,
unless there's a tight end right there.
Tight end. Top tight ends are. Oh, Isaac Granato's right here. I like him. Top tight end. Yeah, and if we took two linebackers and a running back, Tip Raymond's the top tight end. AJ Barner, Tanner McLaughlin. We can wait.
I want to take the running back.
You want to take a running back to troll. Yep. I understand, but we're not going to, because I like Jordan Travis a lot. I'm actually like a Jordan Travis truther. And this is where we take the running back, Kevin. Isaac Grando. We're going to take him at 192.
Yep.
Great potential special teamer. Would round out the running back room quite nicely. We obviously want another running back. We brought Rashad Penny back. So we're going to take a tight end with the last pick, because it is definitely something that we're not going to leave the draft without, in my opinion. So which of these tight ends you want, Kevin? Tanner McLaughlin, Trey Knox, Jack Westover, Brevin Spanford, Isaac Rex, or Marshall Martin IV?
They're going to take Westover because he can teach that versatile kind of fullback tight end slot hybrid position that the team used a lot. He can help the transition for players in that. So right. Get a little bit of a coaching boost there
too. Our draft got an A from the draft grader. It was in the top 36% of drafts. And then this is what I like about this. When the draft assistant says, great job, that's a good looking draft, no suggestions available. Because usually what that says is like, you drafted Jordan Travis, the Seahawks already have a franchise quarterback. That's my favorite. I like that comment.
And insightful.
Because Gino is the franchise quarterback. But yeah, just to recap, we took Johnny Newton, Peyton Wilson, Junior Colson, Braylon Trice, Christian Mahogany, Tavondre Sweat, Jordan Travis, Isaac Grando, and Jack Westover. This would be 1, 2, 3, 4 trenches picks. So there you go. We did a trade down. We did not trade back up, although I do think there would have been value of maybe trading like the 6th and the 7th to try to get back into the 5th. The gap between Sweat and Travis was quite large. So
I'd say this draft is not very sexy, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I don't know, man. We got a quarterback in here. We got...
Oh, I mean, to us it is, but I just mean, you know...
Two linebackers who have a chance to start. Like, it's a bit fun.
Anytime that you can draft off-ball linebackers, you really got to get, you know, people excited.
Yeah, but this is the next Bobby Wagner. That's what you got to say. You just got to tell people, this is the next Bobby Wagner. Okay, there are many ways to support the Seahawks Nest podcast. Best way to do so, patreon.com/Seahawks Nest for as little as $1.24 a month. Join the Discord. Come hang out with us. We are going to be hanging out in the Discord.
We'll be talking ball.
And we'll be there in the draft. That's what you really want is if you want to hear our thoughts live or read our thoughts live, that's where it'll be. So thank you to those who support the show. Andy, Brett, Cooper, Do It All for the Tucci, Evan Flocktimus, Gavin, James, Jost, Joshua, Lucas, Malcolm, Ryan, Samuel, Terrence, Timothy, Tom, Warwolf, Astro, Brand, Blake Nelson. Check them out, Washington Fish Quest on YouTube. Bob, Carl, Casey, Chad, Cracksnacker 420, Daniel, David, Feet Me on Rifles, Jay, Luke, Michelle, Mike, Noah, Poops, Thomas, Brandon, Nick, and Chip. All right, so that's that. Okay, the movie club. Well, so
Since we're all here, do you want to do a quick dining thing real quick? Since Brett could give a recommendation.
Oh yeah, Brett, give us a food recommendation for
I have a timely Seattle. One, and Brett can give one.
What kind of area do you want?
And Seattle, just go Seattle, any Seattle area. go ahead, Kevin. I'll give mine.
Yeah, while you think. All right, so I went to the Tulip Festival, a place I've gone to a couple times. When we go up there, it's on the highway right by the Tulip Festival up in Skagit Valley. It's called the Net Drive-In. It is exactly what I want on a road trip. It is
crinkle cut fries.
It is crinkle cut fries. It is
hot fudge milkshake that makes you feel slightly ill.
That is definitely on the menu, though. They had a banana cream pie milkshake that was exactly what I wanted. There's like the seating is picnic tables around the back. And my good sir, this is basically a photo booth that someone turned into it's a shack that they are cooking burgers inside of. It's everything that you want in a roadside burger establishment. So nice. If you're going up to see the flowers, stop in there, grab a burger and a shake. It's very good.
Okay. Thank you for that, Kevin. I'm going to say, Dozone, which I know is very popular. However, I'd never been there and, just, you know, go to the International District and just treat yourself. Just pop down to any dumpling place. You will not be disappointed. Dumplings are forever.
You know, I've been eating them like once a week. Costco food court.
Still good.
Bro, my kids love it. And it's so nice to be like, hey, I'm going to buy one hot dog with a soda and one chocolate chip cookie for $4. And then both my kids are going to be happy. Doesn't get any better than that.
The only good CEO in American business still running the show over at Costco. The rest of them can take a hike.
All right. So, okay. We're our movie club. So, okay. I'm going to tell the background of this, how this happened. So, yesterday, my wife and me both got the kids to sleep at like a reasonable hour. It was like they were both asleep at like 7:55, and I was like, oh, we did it. Like, they're both asleep. And I was like, do you want to watch a movie? And I was like, yeah, let's watch a movie. So we go downstairs and we look on Amazon at like what's in that section where you can buy the movie, but it's not quite actually released yet, you know? And so we were like looking and we're like, oh, Dune 2's in here. Should we watch Dune 2? And I was like, I don't want to stay up for 3 hours. Let's watch something shorter. The next movie on the list was The Beekeeper, starring Jason Statham. And I said, do you want to watch The Beekeeper? And Amanda was like, sure, why not? I like Jason Statham. He's fine. So we watched The Beekeeper. The Beekeeper. David Ayer's directing. It's written by someone who is notable as well. Kurt Wimmer, who wrote like Equilibrium and Salt and the Total Recall remake and Ultraviolet and a bunch of other movies. Thomas Crown Affair. Mm-hmm. This guy's pretty prolific writer. And we all know David Ayer's from his hits and misses. Okay, they're making an action movie. I would say this movie is like a John Wick ripoff. Okay, I have so many thoughts if I had to just describe it to someone else though in one sentence, it's kind of a John Wick ripoff.
Let me find the line in my review.
I got one first. I know nothing about this movie. I looked at the poster just now and I decided this is Candy Man for white guys. That is my only opinion about this movie.
Okay. So Brett, they were trying to appeal to everyone in this movie. Okay. We got guns and fights.
Yeah.
Guns and fights for the right winger, for the left wingers. The bad guy is the president. Okay. For old people, the bad guy is a telephone scammers. And for the youths, we've got the lady from Umbrella Academy. So we've got it. We've got it all.
Wow. Also, we're killing business. Yeah, that's someone killed budget John Wick, pseudo grandma, and hive of dogs, and the world will pay.
I mean, do you here's my review, and then I'll explain how I got here, which is that who needs plot when you can make everything a bee analogy. I cannot express to you how everything in this movie comes back to bees, and I mean that in the most literal sense. Like the movie starts with
he's protecting the
Jason hive. Jason Statham is a beekeeper, and he's doing beekeeper stuff. He captures hornets, then he breaks a light and uses a taser to murder the hornets in a bag, which is a thing that I didn't know that you could do. I don't know if that's how you're supposed to kill hornets. It's definitely how he decided to kill hornets, by putting them in a bag, breaking a fluorescent light inside, and lighting and using a taser to electrocute them. Then like stuff happens. Okay, so he's living in a beehive next to an old lady's house.
No, he's living in a barn, not a beehive. You're being too literal.
Every barn can become a beehive. Let's be very honest.
But she's all happy because, you know, he's brought the land back because of his bees. You know, they're so good. There's like an environmental twist on this as well. Anyway, she gets scammed by a ring of prolific phone scammers in a thing that they tried to make look like Wolf of Wall Street. They tried to make it look
hard.
They tried to make it look like phone scammers are Jordan Belfort. Okay, which that's fine. That is kind of what Jordan Belfort was. I don't think
there's a huge line between Jordan Belfort and phone scammers. Let's be honest about that.
It's like pretty much the same thing. So then she gets scammed for millions. And her reaction to that is she shoots herself in the head because she's like embarrassed and, you know, that's
because it included a charity she was running. And so she lost all the charity's money. So, she killed herself.
Yeah. So she kills herself. Jason Statham goes over there with a jar of honey in the morning because he's going to give he's friends with her, and her smoke alarm is on, and he goes in and she's dead. Her daughter, the FBI agent, and a bunch of other people come out to investigate. He gets arrested and then he's let go. Anyway, the whole movie is based on he's part of some kind of secret. By
the
way,
that was the first 15 or so minutes of the movie. The rest of the movie is killing.
Yeah, this movie does not mess. That's the entire plot of the movie. And then two things I appreciate about this movie. Number one is just the sheer magnitude of bee analogies. Just the amount of times that things came back to like bees, beehives, things that bees do. He's the queen killer, all this stuff. Like there's so much bee analogies. Okay, now that's number one. That's just fantastic work. They really drive it home. This is the key movie in the insect cinematic universe. Okay, that's number one. my number two.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna mute myself for a little
bit. You don't like the insect cinematic universe? What's the next movie? The Fly was probably the first movie in it, right?
Excuse me. We'll get to that. I have a whole series of sequel ideas that I was gonna read off at the end.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what the other movies in that.
Giving you the rest of this.
The second thing I appreciate.
This is definitely set up for a sequel at the end.
Pause the podcast, watch the movie, and come back because this is a huge spoiler. Okay. The second thing I really appreciate about this movie is that I started to figure it out after a while, but it was like a huge reveal that the bad guy was the president. And it was so funny when it happened. I was dying. I was like,
My favorite part is that the breadcrumbs for that.
Yeah, so I started
the bee analogies.
I started to figure it out, and I just turned to my wife about, like, I don't know, 40 minutes into the movie, and I go, if the bad guy for this movie turns out to be the president, this is going to be the wildest shit I've ever seen in my life. And then 20 minutes later, it was. I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe. This is like
when we were watching Plane, and I explained how the rest of the movie was going to roll out at the end of the first act, and it rolled out exactly
and
like
she's
that.
Like a very, the only way to do it. And she's like a very heavy-handed Trump analog. Like she got all her money in a really corrupt way, and like is from business. She quit running a business and left it in trust for her son, who is like a total scumbag, to run his business or whatever. Also, they just like shadow drop Mini Driver into this movie, like at one point. Like it's just like, and Jeremy Irons is a prominent character, and it's like, right? it's absolutely wild what's happening in this movie, because it looks like the quality of what you're looking at, like it just looks like they filmed it in 3 weeks. Like it doesn't hit me as like, oh yeah, this is like high quality. Like there's a lot of people involved in this. It's like they were just trying
This is the highest effort Netflix original movie ever, is what it looks like.
That is what it looks like. But it's actually like entertaining. I was very entertained. All right, Kevin, I've talked a ton about The Beekeeper.
I feel like this movie is what Polar wanted to be.
Okay.
Yeah. I also feel like you could make three of this movie a year and I would never get tired of it. Like just variations on this type of movie. Like
If they make Beekeeper 2, I'm going to watch it.
What was the Bob Odenkirk, John Wick movie?
Nobody.
This is great, like movie. Budget or Nobody.
Yes.
But it's along the same line. Like, if you like Nobody, you'll like this movie. If you like Scott Atkins movies, you'll like this movie.
If you like Plane.
Yeah.
And That's what I told Kevin. I said, this is my selling. My sales pitch to Kevin was like, this is more about bees somehow than Plane was about Plane. And it is. There's so much bee shit in this.
That's movie. Because when there are no bees, it's still about bees. Whereas Plane is only about Plane when there's Plane.
Would you say this was written by somebody who just found out that bees have a complicated society and they could not wait to tell the world?
I think somebody hate watched the bee movie and wrote a script.
I can respect that.
I feel like that this movie started out as like a revenge thriller for olds. Like, oh, it's a revenge porn for people who got scammed on the phone. But then like evolved so far from that.
It's got this wild plot to throw
with. It just kept spinning out of control. And then it was like, oh, like Brett, there's some crazy stuff that happens in this movie. There's one part where the beekeeper, that's what I'm going to call Jason Statham's character from now on. The beekeeper.
That's what he gets called for a very poorly portrayed
movie. Because most people call him that, yeah. He has a name. It's Adam Clay. Which is a name that you make up.
I will get to this in a minute.
When you're five. But he there's lots of crazy ways he kills people. One, he chops a guy's fingers off and then lets him escape so that he can call his boss. That way Jason Statham can call his boss while he straps that guy to his truck and drives it off of a bridge. Like with a big strap, you know, one of those ones you like tighten with the crank. Jason Statham's wild in this movie. What about that villain they introduced in the final act, Kevin, the South African guy with the smushed face?
That was a whole thing. Like, by the way, that guy was doing a way better job of playing Conor McGregor's character than Conor McGregor did in Roadhouse.
That's what Conor McGregor. They need to put him in a chair with his eyes open and have him watch that, because that guy was unhinged and he went crazy.
Yeah, and then I think the other things that are going on that we need to keep into account here, like, okay, so like that part was crazy. You have the chick who shows up with the minigun, who's supposed to be the new beekeeper, and they act like it's going to be this big subplot thing that happens. It lasts one scene, and she dies. And
he kills her by yeeting a jar of honey into her head. It's awesome.
Yes, he does.
He hit her in the head with a jar of honey. That's how he killed her.
Yeah, I also like that somebody asked if he's Winnie the Pooh. Yeah, there's just all these great moments in here. The scene, like every scene where he just is beating on somebody, it all works. Like, he walks into the first like big action sequence, he goes in with two gas cans and just like walks in with he pulls his truck up to the front of the bad guy's headquarters, walks in with a couple of gas cans, beats crap out of some security guys, and just starts lighting the place on fire.
Yep. And he's like, everyone needs to leave because I'm blowing this place up. And then they like try to, they're like lame security guards try to beat him up, but he's the beekeeper, so he just destroys all of them. There, another thing. Okay, that scene.
They right also do the John Wick hype thing where, like, the security guy for the CIA Jeremy Irons is like a retired CIA deputy director or whatever, and he is the security guy for the company. And he does the John Wick hype thing where he's just like, oh, you pissed off a beekeeper. Well, you're dead. Who is he? He's the last face you're going to sneer at.
So Peter Mallark from Hunger Games plays like the weaselly like son of the of the president who's running this scam business. He tells Jeremy Irons about the beekeeper, and he's like, Jeremy Irons is like, yeah, that's going to be the last pair of eyes you see before you die. But Kevin, you skipped out on a line. Pause the podcast or skip 20 seconds forward if you don't want to hear a swear. You skipped like the best line in the movie, which is when the Veronica Parker character, the secret agent who is the guy's daughter, goes up to one of the scammers who scammed her mom and says, nice shirt. Did you steal it from a casket, you dog fucker?
Yes, that was so good.
Great line, dude. This movie is full of stuff like that.
A guy getting chopped in half by a falling elevator. This movie has like some creeping around in the vents. This movie has one of those sneaking in past security under a truck scenes. Like, and I don't feel like I'm spoiling it, because you know it's gonna happen as soon as you see the way that the scene is like blocked and framed. You're like, oh, this guy's gonna get kidnapped by the elevator, isn't he? Yeah,
this movie is not a work of art. This is the kind of movie, though, you're just going to be laughing at the whole time, because it's just like so over the top crazy. Like, if you are the kind of person who likes RoboCop, like, yeah, this is the idiot version of RoboCop, which is great. That's just what we need.
I'm into that.
More stupid RoboCops.
I need a dumber movie. The last two movies I watched were Monkey Man and Fury Road. So I'm ready to just turn it off and enjoy.
Yeah, this movie's dumber.
Have a movie for you.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, most movies are dumber than those two. All right. So
Best pun name for this movie. You got one?
Okay.
How about Olympus Has Pollen?
That's good. Here's my set of sequels. I both have his new name, his new job, and the type of pun you'll
end. By the way, the ending of the movie is nice because, like, you know, usually at the end of a movie like this, everyone like shakes hands and high fives, and then like the beekeeper becomes best friends with the secret agent or whatever. In this one, the secret agent is pointing a gun at him, and she's like, "You know what? I'm gonna let you go because that was pretty slick." And then he scuba dives off the coast. Off the coast into the sunset.
Nah, I don't believe that.
So now we get
setting me up.
They're definitely setting up Beekeeper too. I'll tell you that.
Because I feel like his last name needs to be some type of element. Okay. So we have Adam Wood, Park Ranger, bear puns.
Okay.
Adam Irons, Zookeeper, lion puns. And then you finish it off the fourth movie, the final one, what you're building up to the whole time. Adam Mudd, an ornithologist. Because then you could do birds and bees puns together to bring
someone's
it full
gotta
circle.
Someone's last name's got to be Smoke, because bees hate smoke, and it will basically be the T-1000 in the sequel.
We have the enemy last one.
I have one thing for you guys to get excited about. You guys ready for this? David Ayer's next movie also stars Jason Statham. It is called Levin's Trade. It's based on a book by Chuck Dixon, screenplay by Sylvester Stallone. I guarantee this movie is going to rip. Just like The Beekeeper, because that is a great group, and it's the same. It's Amazon MGM, just like this movie. It's got they have another set of like weird actors that they're just going to shadow drop on you while you're watching. Michael Pena, David Harbour. So yeah, this is going to be legit. I'm excited,
dude. Every streaming service should have at least one of this movie every year, because it's just guaranteed. Like, everyone's gonna want to watch it.
This is the kind of movie that comes out in January. It's the perfect January film. It's the perfect January movie. It's not too heavy. It doesn't you don't have to think too much. Just
it's never gonna get an award. It doesn't matter. There's no awards consideration. It just goes in and you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, that movie. All right.
Yeah, that movie rips. Yeah, you're just having a blast like while you're watching it. It's just so good. That said, if you don't like violence, you probably won't like this movie, so
shame on you.
Don't watch it. All right. You got anything else to say, Kevin, before we go?
I'm good. Brett, you got an antidote?
No, I'm good. All right. It passed.
Okay, for Kevin, for Brett, for the Ghost of Eric. We'll see you next week. Go hard.